I'm going to deal with some things that are a little bit controversial. You'll go with the major theme of what I'm talking about, but you may not always agree with some of the points that I'm talking about. But I don't care. I think that you have your own ideas on some of these things, but we want to get to the main point of it. And that will, I should say, will be very clear. Now, Peter asked me on Monday. I was just going on the train up to Melbourne, and I get this phone call, and it was from Peter, and of course the usual question is, yes, you're taking the service, what is the title of your service? And I thought, well, I'd thought about this for a while. I thought, oh, look, I'll give it a different title to what it really is about, but it'll be good enough. I said, the really thing is about man's greatest sin. Okay, the title of this message is man's greatest thing, sin, not thing, greatest sin. Okay. And when I thought of that, and I thought, now, what sort of response will people think? What could it be? Is it murder? Is it theft? Is it terrible things like slavery? Is it racism? Is it disrespect for God? Ignoring God? Whatever, you know, and you'd think about a number of things you'd think that might be man's greatest sin. I don't know whether Peter, when I said it to you, whether you looked it up to find out what it was, because there is some statement on that 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 I have to take into consideration. All sin is a rejection of God in some way. Okay. But forgetting that, not all human beings understand who or what God is. Paul makes that pretty clear in the beginning when he's in Romans chapter 1, when he says, when you see the heavenly bodies, you know that there is a power beyond that. When men reject that, they reject God completely. They've lost something very dear and important. But that means that some people don't fully understand what God is. So we can't say that's perhaps man's greatest sin. Man's greatest sin really is man's inhumanity to his fellow man. And that's a quote also by a certain lady called Ellen White. Man's inhumanity to his fellow man. And when you think of it, how human beings have treated one another is an indication of the greatest sin. Here they are, you and I, man and woman, boy and girl, whatever. They're human beings. Yet how human beings have treated one another is absolutely disgusting in some ways. Cruel. Bitter. There's certain things that show this. We have war. Presently see the effects of war. I mean, at least we have a TV screens now, and we can see for ourselves what is happening in places like Syria. And that's just one of the things. When you think about Vietnam, when you think about the Second World War, First World War, we've got a lot of memory about the First World War, about Australia. No thought that there was other nations involved in it, and who lost and who won, and all the people that were murdered, butchered, killed, and so forth and so on. All these things are forgotten because of victory, you know, sort of thing. When you think of the cruelty that's involved with war, racism, that's a blight on society. How cruel it is that because you're a different colour, a different look, different shape, you're treated often differently. And don't think it's just white with black. Remember David Down saying that in India they think they're superior to Negroes. So it comes with different races as well. But the one thing I want to point out today that I find is one of the cruelest things that man does. And it shows that this world is dominated by Satan when we say of wars, racism, cruelty, conflicts of all kinds, sexism in the third of, you know, these days, the Me Too campaign, you hear about it, we'll hear a lot more about it, etc. Some of it's good, some of it's bad, etc. But one of the things that shows up again on your TV screens of man's inhumanity to man is poverty. Is poverty. When I think of what you see, pictured before us of how we as human beings can treat other human beings to leave them with little while we have so much. And I'm saying it from, if I was a person in an underdeveloped country, I'd be saying, we were so little and you have so much. I say, we're in this country, we have so much and they have so little. And we're quite, the world is largely at home with that sort of feeling. They don't seem to do that much about it. It's a cancer that's throughout this world. And I want to read some statistics. And these are old statistics. These were written in about 2002. But I want you to think about them. And it's rather interesting. And these statistics have not changed very much for the last nearly 20 years. More than 1 billion people in the world, approximately one-fifth of the world's population, live in absolute or abject poverty. You think of it. One-fifth of the world's population live in absolute or abject poverty, meaning that they lack basic necessities for survival. That's terrible. One-fifth of the world goes to bed hungry every night. Dear, you and I have never known what it is to lose a meal, most of us anyway. One-third of all children in the developing world are undernourished. And when you see those pictures of those little children, and you can see their bones and whatnot, and people will fight a war and they'll let children starve. Oh, gets my blood up. One-fifth of the human population owns four-fifths of the world's wealth. Well, we could go further and we could say that, I want to be careful on this one, 2% of the 2% of the USA's people own 50% of the wealth of that country. 2%. Doesn't say that here. Less than 50% of the population of the developing world are literate. That is, they can read. Less than 50%. More than 80% in the industrial nations are literate. We can read in industrial nations, the West in particular. Only 50% of the developing world's people have access to clean, safe water. Brother. You read those statistics and they're like statistics, but when you think of it, there is a human face to every one of those statistics. There are human beings that are being pictured there. And when you look at it, and we have more of an idea today, millions actually experience hunger, okay, genuine hunger, both children and adults. There are so many people in the world that are not adequately clothed for warmth, for protection from the sun, from heat and cold. Just think of it. And I had a laugh about this, but this is an exaggeration, but it's true. I was looking at houses one time, and I went into the, you know, these were houses for sale sort of thing. I was just looking at them. And you go into... It's not humorous, but it's terribly tragic. And I went into the, and this lady, and she was only one of many, went into the, you know, showing the main bedroom. And then there was this wardrobe. Clothes upon clothes upon clothes that were her clothing. And you just think of it. And there are people who haven't got enough to cover themselves or to keep themselves warm, who can't afford heating in the cold and of the northern winters and so forth. There are those, when you see it last night, was it not last night, the night before, showing about Mumbai in India, or was one former time Bombay, the most prosperous city in India. And here these mansions going up everywhere, millions of people with these priceless mansions they're going. And right beside it was these terrible shanty towns made out of tin and cardboard and bits and pieces that people are living in. And they can live them. They can leave them living there. That's what hurts me, that they can have that and do nothing about it. live in these crude shelters, squats, etc., among filth, no proper sewerage, etc. Fancy if it was you to go dirty week after week, wouldn't know what it is to have a clean wash or shower. Boy, oh boy, would you smell? Would you like that? Not to have clean water to drink, to wash yourselves with. To see when you see those pictures of, not very far from north of Australia, of children living off rubbish dumps. And should I go on? But that is part of the human face of poverty. Historically, and this is the tragedy, and you can see that the world is under Satan's control. And this is how he has created, he's made human beings to be self-centered, to be greedy, to be selfish. The world's majority have always lived in poverty. The greatest number of people throughout ever history have always lived in poverty. The few have had either sufficient or abundance. The few, the very few, especially in historic times. And you and I, we're fortunate in some respects, in most respects, that we don't really know what poverty or being poor is. Yes, we're not, I'm sure in this very church, there are people in here who haven't got that much money, compared with many others in this very city or town, but you are still far better off than most of these other people that we've been talking about, that the poor. Most of us have sufficient or overabundance to eat. We have a roof over our heads, usually a pretty good roof over our heads. We have more than one bedroom oftentimes. We have, you know, we have more than enough clothing. That's what I said about this wardrobe. You go, it always makes me laugh when you go down to Warrnambool. You have all in Liebig Street or something, and you always see the shops there. Sorry, ladies, I pick on you about this one. But it doesn't matter whether you're 9 or 90. They're going in just looking at this, you know, this, oh, wouldn't mind that, you know, and you think, well, what do they need any more for their wardrobe? And so, we get left out a bit on that, but we still have enough, more than enough clothes. We have warm homes. Our houses, we have motor vehicles, most of us. We have access to public transport. We have access to doctors and medical care. Hospitals, where needed. Many of these places, they don't have such things. But even in this country, there are people who don't experience these things. But how much worse is it in the experience in underdeveloped countries and nations, which make up the majority of the world's population? Underdeveloped countries make up the majority of the world's population. Okay, what does the Bible have to say about poverty? Well, I'll get off on some tangents on this one, and you might disagree with some of the things I have. What gets me is, on this subject, the attitude of some Christians, including some Seventh-day Adventists, about the subject of poverty. And usually they are people in the Western world that have these opinions. They're faced with these poverty statistics, I better get those statistics together, and we should be troubled by them, especially if we profess a faith in a good God, a Christian God. But there are two excuses that most Christians or non-Christians use who are well off, or well enough off. And these two objections, they use to salve their consciences and evade the responsibilities. And you might be even one of them, or I don't know. The first excuse is that the poor are lazy. It's mainly their own fault that they're where they are. If you help them, they become dependent. Haven't you heard that word from governments? They become dependent. You know, welfare dependent. Okay, right, that's okay. If you help them, they become dependent. What they need to do is pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. That's the usual thing. If they worked harder, they'd be able to cope with everything. They'd be well off, you know, but they're so lazy, they don't do much or anything, etc. Worked harder. This is a philosophy very much today in the United States of America. Very much so. And believe me, it's the wealthiest nation on the world, in the world, that has more millionaires per population than any other country, and yet it has alarming poverty. But we don't hear too much about that. This is why we have some things that are happening at the present time. In fact, Donald Trump has received a rebuttal in terms of the, in return to, should I say, the House of Representatives. And that's rather interesting. And the number of those people who have been elected are black. And you'll see some emphasis on social change coming up. But this is an attitude that many in the West say, that people poor are lazy. That's where they are. That's where they belong. They should be kept there and so forth. Yeah, the poor are their own worst enemy. And in some cases, that might be true. I'm not doubting that there are some are lazy. But I've seen some wealthy people who are also lazy, but thanks to mum and dad, they came into a business that their dads and mums worked very hard for. And they're just as lazy, let me tell you. Not all of them, but there are some. That's for sure. And I ask the question, are we in the West in any way responsible for the starving poor people in the developing world? Are we somewhat responsible for this case? Are we our brother's keeper or keepers? The Bible does speak about, in Proverbs, about some being sluggards, that they'd need to learn from the ants about industry in Proverbs chapter 6, verse 6. But the Bible also insists that the greater majority of the poor are not scroungers on other people's charity, but victims of other people's injustice. Now think of it. Other people's injustice have put people where they are, as far as poverty is concerned, in so many cases. And our responsibility is not to condemn them, but to support them, to bring up these people, to help them up. The second excuse, and where some people get so that they don't need to be involved, they feel, is the words of Jesus, in fact. So why bother about it? Mark 14, verse 7 says, the poor will be always with us. So if there's going to be always poor, well, let it be that way. You know, what can we do about it? It's just going to be the case that they're always going to be the poor. And this is totally taken out of context because Christ is quoting from Deuteronomy 15. And he makes two important references to the poor appear in verse 11. There will always be poor people in the land, Christ says. And then verse 4. There should be no poor among us or among you. Why? Because God has given sufficient resources to feed the poor and the hungry. I'm talking about food in this case, to look after that requirement of people. There's enough resources, not only to be able to feed them, but to be able to clothe them, to be able to house them, etc. for the people in this world. God has given that. But, there will continue to be the poor, as Jesus said, because of the continuance of human injustice, greed and selfishness. Poverty, the most part of it, is the result of man's greed and injustice. Again, I'll say this way. The majority of people throughout the world historically have lived in poverty or close to subsistence, but a small minority have lived in luxury and made sure that they kept things that way. When you go through the history of Israel, once they demanded a king, Samuel warned them, you'll be putting your efforts and your energies into looking after the flash lifestyle of your king when you could have been receiving the benefits. And once this started, this which is a principle you see throughout history, the ruling class have everything and you are just there to work for their benefit. And that's what's happened. And this is still created, the same sort of thing. It's not God's will that we should have such division between rich and poor as we have. But at the same time, God has not allowed has it that we all are equal, so that we might be awakened to sympathy and action to help those who are less fortunate than ourselves. When you look at the old Mosaic law, this is how it was designed. There was always provisions for keeping and looking after the poor in Israel. And they didn't stay poor in the sense that they were poverty stricken, that they didn't have food or anything. They had all sorts of provisions to keep them so that they could live in a style that would at least allow them to live decently. But historically, also, we have this other effect. When you have a great deal of poverty, there are forces at work where human beings who are in such dire need feel that they have to redress some of these things. And then that's when you have these brutal revolutions. When the majority poor try to deal with the injustice they suffered. You see this in the French Revolution. I've read so much about the French Revolution. How the aristocracy from Louis XIV, the 15th and the 16th, they lived. They really lived. If any of you have gone to the Palace of Versailles, you really see what richness, luxury, overindulgence is like. It's a magnificent place. Makes the British one look like a shambles in comparison. They lived so much, and the higher clergy, the cardinals and the bishops in France, lived in such a way. And they put down the poor and ground them down to great poverty. Until it came to the place in the time of Louis XVI, when the country was totally bankrupt, that the poor and the educated of these people who stood up for them violated the rule of the leaders. And then you have in 1789 the storming of the Bastille, and from there you have the French Revolution, where it got out of complete control, where the poor in Paris were so sick of being badly treated that they wanted to see blood. And they got the blood of the king, then they got the blood of the queen, then they got the blood of this one and that one. It wasn't safe for anybody. They became just as much tyrants as their cruel masters. And can you understand why they were like that? Yes. The Russian Revolution, which is only 101 years away from now. Just think of it, 101 years away, 1917. For the last 50 or 60 years, in fact for hundreds of years, but the last 50 or 60 years, the Russian people, so many of them, were in serfdom. They were under the control of their masters. They were treated badly. They suffered such deprivation, etc., by the Tsars who lived it up, and the Orthodox Church was the same sort of thing, the leaders of that, until it came to the revolt of the proletariat, that is, the working class of the people had had enough, and then they revolted. And the common workers overthrew their oppressors with exactly the same brutality as they had received. And you ask yourself, did the poor have reasonable grounds for their actions? We don't agree with what they did, but we can understand why. And when those things, those conditions are there and ripe, you can see what happens. I'll go back to Victorian England. Okay, that's 150 years or so or more. And the Industrial Revolution. Hundreds of thousands of people were crowded into the miserable, cold, dark, dank, dirty cities of England to be the grist in the mill of the greedy industrialists. This is where you get Lancashire and Yorkshire, where the cotton mills in Lancashire, the woolen mills in Yorkshire, how the poor, unfortunate individuals worked 14 hours a day, 6 days a week, living in damp, cold, miserable hovels. Children to help clean up huge machines, risking life and limb, getting underneath them to try and clean them. clean them. Then there were the coal mines, where boys as young as 12 and 14 were expected to work in the depths of the earth along with their degraded fathers. And what for? For a mere pittance. While those who owned these industries lived it up, and really lived it up. These things happened then, and similar things are happening today. In the sweatshops of Asia, for example, in much of the developed world, we have similar conditions for men, women, and children. In fact, women cop it more. You think of the sweatshops of Bangladesh. Well, they're just an example of many. In India, the same sort of things. People have worked to the bone, etc. For what? It was not until the 1960s, when the race riots occurred in the United States, all over the United States. I've just been reading about this from a mate of mine who's written a book and where he speaks. And he lived right near this in, what's the place, Detroit, so forth. And he speaks about these things. In the land where all men are created equal, that's what it says in their constitution, all men are created equal, but they're certainly not treated equal, that's for sure. And they wanted to be treated like human beings, and thus we had these race riots. Some of the things that went on in America, and they happen in Australia to some degree too, and happen in Britain as well in the past, not too long. In the 1930s, Theodore Roosevelt, president of the United States, dared not tamper with the Southern states' lynching laws against Negroes. They, even in the 1930s, if a Negro got out of hand, you strung him up on a tree. That was the end of it. You could get away with it. They couldn't bring in the military forces to stop it. It was a common thing. These were poor, unfortunate individuals that happened to have a black skin. They're treated no better than animals. The working conditions in Chicago of the meat works, because that was the big centre of the meat works. I've just been reading about it, and Joe has just pointed these things out in his book, and how they had to work such long conditions and long hours, and if you're tired and you couldn't work, you lost your job. You got nothing. You were paid so little for long hours, hard work. But how did the ones who owned these factories and these institutions live? They lived it really up. We see in South Africa, and it still is a problem, because you have and this is a hard one to deal with, it's a much more difficult one to deal with, because you have here the whites who definitely own the property, who have the brains, who can make industry work, but the trouble is a lot of the wealth is not shared by the millions of blacks in that country. A minority client control the majority of the wealth. Okay, perhaps some of those examples you feel are a bit extreme, but you know, I think you'll have to really look into it. Now, the book of Proverbs has something to say for Christians about poverty and the poor. And it's rather interesting. And I'm stating a case for, perhaps a little bit exaggerated case for the poor, the undeserving. Well, the deserving, I consider them. But they're the ones that cop it. Proverbs 14, verse 31. He who oppresses the poor shows contempt for their maker. But whoever is kind to the needy honours God. Boy, that's quite clear, isn't it? Anyone who oppresses the poor shows contempt for his maker. It's our attitude to the poor that reflects our attitude to God, it's virtually saying there. And you think of it. Many named the name of Christ who oppressed their fellow men. It's not God that's responsible for the poor, because every human being has an intrinsic value by God himself. But to oppress the poor is to despise God. To honour the poor is to honour God. We are our brother's keeper. Now another one, Proverbs 29 verse 7. I said I'd be a bit controversial, but 29 verse 7, but I think those verses are... Now, this one's quite blunt. The righteous care about justice for the poor, but the wicked have no such concern. Have you thought of that? The righteous, he's not just talking about Christians, he's saying the righteous, those who would claim to be God's son, care for about justice, and that's the point, justice for the poor. But the wicked have no such concern. If you have no such concern, you're classified as wicked. So that's quite blunt, isn't it? Human beings who are poor, underprivileged, don't just need our sympathy, but they also need our justice. And that's what is stated here. Justice requires a certain degree of equality or fairness. Human beings are of equal value. They may not be equal in gifts or intelligence or whatnot, and I do get a bit irritated when I find that people do not seem to think that some people can achieve a lot and others can't, because they're not blessed with always the same ability. I taught a lot of secondary kids, and you see some of them who come from poor backgrounds, and you see the battles that they have of being able to understand things in class. They have not very much opportunity of getting the good jobs, but the kids who've got the brains, well, they can go to the top. And we forget that sometimes. There needs to be an equality of opportunity for everyone, at least some degree of it, at least shown. We have the equal choice, equal chance to hear the gospel. An equal chance or an equal access to the good earth. The resources of the earth were given to mankind not for just a few. You'd wonder sometimes whether it is the few that seem that they're the only ones that deserve it. There should be equal access to the basics, food, water, clothing, shelter. No use providing the gospel and letting human beings starve. And that sometimes we forget that. Equal access to education. Well, that's difficult. And you find some, I'm glad in this country that there is many attempt trying to give poor, unfortunate kids who haven't got the brains at least some chance in life. Because if they don't get a chance when they're young, they're going to be totally disillusioned when they're older. And then you have all the other problems that come with it, drugs and so forth. When I said more than 50% of the people in developing countries are illiterate, and especially women. The righteous care for such people, but the wicked show no concern. Proverbs 31, verse 8 and 9. This is where it really touches the earth here. Proverbs 31, verses 8 and 9. Speak up for those who cannot speak up for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. Speak up for the poor and the needy. The poor are usually powerless and voiceless. They're the ones who have less access to these things. And this powerlessness shows so much. When governments make up their budgets, the least compelling area of their concern is for the downtrodden. Except they're always saying, how can we reduce social security? That's the one thing, Centrelink. We've got to reduce that. You know, we've got to be able to get that down. But believe me, they make sure that the taxation and benefits always favour the rich. You think of the tax cuts. This is a subject I laugh about. You hear the politicians speak about, oh, you'll get the tax cut. Yes, the people at the bottom scale might get $5 a week extra, and then all the prices go up because they do. But have you seen the income tax cuts of the wealthy get in comparison? And they don't need it. Believe me. That's the way it is. That's the way it is. They need people to speak up for them. I think of Charles Dickens. Now, this is way back in the 1860s. He wasn't a professing Christian. But one thing about Charles Dickens, he became wealthy through his novels, right? He wrote these novels. But one of the underlying things of his novels, beside the complex plots that so many people wanted to read, the wealthy particularly, he spoke up for the Victorian poor by exposing the injustices of their society. When you read Dickens, he over-exaggerates some of the people in it, but it certainly makes it clear. I can remember with Oliver Twist and the poor kids in the workhouse. They came up for a bowl of soup that was virtually water and a bit like the chook put his foot through it. And then he comes up to want some more. And then the very picture that he has of the people who provide for it. Here they are, gormandizing themselves on chooks and this sort of feed and whatnot, and they've all got plenty of money and they're well warmed, and they have these poor kids. You know, Charles Dickens wasn't talking about something that didn't happen. He spoke about the injustices of the society that then lived. And we find that still today. Don't think these things don't exist in parts of the world, because they do. They do still live today. The cruelty and the greediness and the brutality and the selfishness of human beings is so often seen. A closer one, Martin Luther King, for a different reason. Ultimately, he was assassinated. But he was the driving force behind the civil rights movement in the US in the 60s. And his famous words, "I have seen the promised land, but I might not enter into it." And he made these other famous words, "I want to live in a nation where a man is not judged by the color of his skin, but on the content of his character." And he still hasn't seen that fulfilled. We as Christians need to speak up for those who suffer injustices, just as these men did. And sometimes we forget that. When you read the book of James, the last chapter, James chapter 5 in particular, 1 to 6, and these passages are often misinterpreted. But James makes something very, very clear that we should be ever mindful of. Where is it? Here we are, James 5, 1 to 1. "Now listen, you rich people. Weep and wail because of the misery that is coming upon you." That is coming. He's speaking for about the very last days. Now this is right up to date. "Your wealth has rotted, and moths have eaten your clothes." He's talking about at the very end of time. "Your gold and silver are corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. Look, the wages you failed to pay the workmen who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. You have lived on earth in luxury and in self-indulgence. You have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered innocent men who are not opposing you." But then he goes on to say, you very people, who he's talking about here, will suffer the judgment of God. You will pay an eternal price for it. And this is so what has happened throughout history and is still happening today. These great corporations and so on. And we see this, that these things have not changed. They have to some degree. But as Christians, we have a responsibility in one sense or another to care and to speak up for those who are less fortunate than we. And there are many of them. And in the underdeveloped world, they are numberless. And it's such a dreadful pity But we know that ultimately God's kingdom will come, and it's coming very soon. And there won't be the poor and the poverty-stricken there. But why should human beings suffer so much in this present life when there is plenty that, if it were shared, could be given? And you and I are very, very fortunate. We live in a country better than most. Not all of us are that is better off for some, but most of us are better off than a lot of others in other countries of this world. And so we will always have the poor with us, yes, but have we got a concern for them? That is the issue. Yes, Lord, perhaps I might have over-exaggerated the point, but perhaps not. The poor should be a concern to us, like they are a concern to you. And Lord, wherever we can we alleviate their dire positions by our money, our efforts, our energies, that to alleviate their situation in some way. Bless us, bless them. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen.